any recession.
Okay, right.
Sure, I think the practical answer to the question is yes, that if you do, if you have taken this other amendment, I think you sort of have to do this one, because otherwise it's so unfair, because you're increasing it on the end that's already paying the freight, you're increasing it even more, and those people aren't drawing that much anyway, and then the guy that's up there getting all sorts of benefits, he's getting $150 a week, and still only paying on $10,000 a week.
Okay. Is there objection to the amendment? I don't think there is. If not, amendment. Okay.
Matter of fact.
Okay, all in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. All opposed? Okay, the amendment carried.
Mr. Chairman, on page 10 of the city substitute. On line five, I moved to delete, moved to put a period after disability and delete. However, a waiver of disqualification on the basis of illness is only available for maximum 4 consecutive years.
Okay, what are we doing here again?
Page 10.
Mr. Chairman, this is a provision that would disqualify a person who was sick. If they're sick for 4 consecutive weeks, then they'd be disqualified from receiving benefits. My motion would delete that disqualification so that, in essence, a person could continue to receive benefits.
Mr. Chairman, we commented on this last night, and of course, we do object to this being taken out, because what you're doing is letting an individual who becomes ill draw unemployment insurance during the whole time he's ill, and this is not the purpose of the unemployment insurance program. And we are giving on it by saying, okay, if he's sick for four weeks, then he can draw benefits. If he's past 4 weeks, then we're going to disqualify him. And so we do object to this being taken out.
Well, now, wait a minute. Okay. I would suppose the purpose of unemployment insurance is to see that a person has something to tide him over until he gets another job. If the person's sick, he can't get another job. I don't understand the rationale.
Well, if the man is ill, he can't get a job. We admit this. And unemployment insurance is not for the purpose of carrying somebody while they're ill. They're supposed to be able and available for work. This is the purpose of our law, able for work and actively seeking work. Yet if they're ill, they can't do any of these things. And we admit this. So we say for 4 weeks, if the guy's got the flu or something, fine, we carry him on the unemployment insurance rolls. But if he comes too ill to work, then he should not, this is not a disability insurance. Some states have a disability insurance. If we want to go that route, let's set one up. But as long as it's an unemployment insurance law, let's abide by the rules and keep it unemployment insurance.
Okay. Is there further comments?
Yeah, we refer to section 1 there on page 9. I'm not sure that I understand the language
for work.
Because of his non-commercial fishing and hunting necessary for survival. If you fish and hunt just for survival, how do you get on unemployment compensation?
Well, I respond, that's our present law allows the people in the village that maybe they worked during, they established a benefit year and they went back to their village, and this is their traditional way of existing besides working, and they hunt and fish for survival, so we do not disqualify him from unemployment insurance benefits at that time. And this has been in the law for years gone by.
Okay.
Okay. Is there further discussion of the proposed amendment? Okay. There is objection to the proposed amendment. All in favor of the amendment deleting the language on page 10, lines 5 through 7. All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Motion passed. Okay, the next, Russ.
Mr. Chairman, the next amendment would be, I'd like the department to propose the technical changes that you have enlisted that we talked about, some of which we've accepted already, in terms of that. Are there any other?
Russ, is that the end of your substantive amendments?
Yes, it's okay. The end of the substantive ones.
Okay, now we've got technical amendments. Okay.
Okay, the federal government wrote us and said we would suggest, rather than using 60% or 75% or 100% of the average annual wage, since this usually entails pennies, that you would round it off to the nearest thousand, and we would propose that we introduce an amendment saying we will round off the average or whatever tax base we use to the nearest thousand.
I move that amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there objection?
Where is it going?
It would go into, on page 1, sections 2 and 3, I'm sorry, sections 3 only,
okay.
Where it says 75% of the average annual wage, we will round that to the nearest thousand.
Okay. If there's no objection, that motion will be adopted. Let's go ahead.
I believe, rest did not introduce. On page 3, line 2, 1981 should be deleted and you should reinsert 1974. What you're doing is you're saying we will not use the following table till 1981, but the table you will use prior to 1981 is the table because there are no changes to the table itself.
Right. That was a typographical word.
Okay. Basically, that's what it is.
I move that one.
Okay. Is there objection? Here, no objection. Motion carried.
Again, on page 4, line 3, I would suggest that you delete this entire section. Again, what you have is 1981 date, which isn't needed.
Okay, that was the only change. I move the amendment.
Okay. Is there objection? Here, no objection. Motion to delete section 8 and to renumber the subsequent section accordingly is adopted.
Page 4, line 22.
Okay.
We request that you delete the word rate class because you do not have rate class listed anywhere else in the law and insert amount in its place.
8.
Rate class.
8.
Oh, it's page 4, line 22.
I move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there objection to the amendment to substitute the word amount for the words rate class on page 4, line 22? There's no objection. Motion carries.
Page 5, line 14. To be inserted after the words of record, the following. The claimant may file an appeal from that monetary redetermination within 10 days after notification of the redetermination or after the date the redetermination is mailed to his last address of record. What we're saying here is what we wrote in the law was that he may file an appeal from the monetary determination. Our normal procedure is to file first for a redetermination and then for an appeal from the redetermination. And that's the language we proposed.
Okay. Is there a motion on the amendment?
I move the amendment.
Mr. Meekins moves the amendment. Do we have
coffee?
Okay. Is there any objection to the proposed amendment? Hearing no objection, the amendment will be adopted.
Page 5, line 23. Delete the word denial and insert determination in its place. Insert a period after it. Delete and insert the claimant in its place.
Move the amendment. Okay. There's an objection. Hearing none, the amendment will be adopted.
Page 5, line 26 and 27. To be inserted after benefits may not be paid, the following language. For any weeks with respect to which the determination of disqualification was made, and the words of disqualification deleted.
I move the amendment. Okay. Is there objection to the amendment? Proposed amendment, page 5. Hearing no objection, the amendment will be adopted. I'm assuming if people have questions now, they'll butt in. We're going to plow ahead.
Okay, on page 12, lines 14, 15, and 16. We'd like to see the sentence deleted that says, the department may waive this disqualification wholly or in part as it considers proper and equitable.
This is on a fraud disqual. It's not a simple overpayment or anything. And if a person is convicted of fraudulently obtaining benefits, we do not feel there should be any waiver of benefits at all. And they should be collected. And so the department feels that there should be nothing in the law to permit us to waive a fraud overpayment, a fraud disqualification.
In that section, we already have the ability to make it a 2-week disqualification, a 6 or a 13 or a 26. And we do want to waive that.
Move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Motion made to adopt the amendment. Is there objection? If there are no objection, the amendment will be adopted and the sentence will be deleted. Page 12, line 15, 16, 14.
On page 13, lines 8 through 14, we would like to see this section deleted.
Okay, what? Just give us a short one on that.
Okay. You want to? Okay, this is a case that's where it's to disqualify for benefits in the new year, and he has to reimburse the fund for the full amount to where he's again eligible before drawing benefits. And we don't feel that he should, we can go ahead and collect from him, make him reimburse what he owes us. And if he does become eligible, then we will offset what he owes us for his future claims. If he has to repay us in full before he becomes eligible, there's no way that we can use his claims to offset.
And you may not have the money available.
So we'd be losing money this way. And we just rather have the opportunity, when he does become eligible and he files a claim, we can use any existing claims to offset his overpayment. It's an administrative situation.
Okay. Other questions, comments? Not Russ?
Move the amendment.
Okay. Objection. Okay, if there are no objections, the amendment will be adopted.
Okay, on page 17, lines 7 and 8, this is a drafting error. The underlined words that already exist in the law. I'd like to see the underlining deleted.
Yeah, I move it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. There's objection. Hearing no objection, the underlining on lines 7 and 8 will be deleted.
Chairman, I have an amendment on this page that goes in on between lines 1 and 5 on page 17. If you remember, this is the language that talks about when a guy's out on workman's comp, and the department has testified that after 5 years they don't have any records, and was somewhat of a consensus, I think, of all the members that we should put a three-year limitation on. And I'd like to do that.
Keeping a record, you mean?
And the language here is after injuries. On line 5, after injuries, why don't you read it?
Insert the following new material. If those quarters were completed within 3 years immediately before the individual claims benefits.
I'd move that amendment, Mr. Chairman. That places a 3-year limit on
All right, I'm not sure, though, that people got that language, because somebody coughed right in the middle of it. Had to milk to maybe get it. Is it written down over there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to have language delivered over here. All right. Is there objection to the amendment? Okay, hearing no objection, the amendment will be adopted. Okay.
On page 18, lines 8 through 15, we'd like to delete section 28 and insert the following in place of it. The average annual wage means the amount determined by the research and analysis section by dividing the total wages paid by subject employers during a 12-month period by the average monthly employment reported by subject employers.
Okay. Are there questions, comments, anybody on that? Is there a motion on the amendment?
I'd like an explanation.
Okay.
I've said exactly the same thing that's in there, except, and the feds did recommend that we take out the mathematical equation that's in there and have clear, concise wording. That's one of the things we did. Rather than saying, and I've taken out the wording that says, as computed for purposes of reporting to the United States Department of Labor, that isn't specifically what it's tallied for, okay, and just trying to make a simple definition. We haven't changed the meaning or the numbers or the amounts. We've merely changed the wording.
Okay. Right.
Chairman, I'll move that amendment.
Okay, is there objection? Hearing no objection, the amendment will be adopted.
Okay, I do have some on the effective dates. There are some that, because they were taxed, they started them January 1st, but of the provision that was being changed was a disqualification provision, and that starts July 1st, and you would have a gap in your law. There are those types of things in the effective dates, and as soon as all the sections have been renumbered, I would like to go through and make sure they're all starting at the proper times.
Okay, well, I guess you ought to do that in the Senate then.
well, Mr. Chairman, can we make a motion more specific than that? What's the problem? I mean,
okay, there's one provision that's a tax provision. They started at January 1st, but what we were changing was a section in the law, that section 380 that we've repealed. We're repealing it on July 1st, and we're enacting a new section on July 1st, but you're not changing that section in the law until January 1st. Okay, and I think we can make a motion on that.
I move that we...
I think it was a technical amendment. They re-changed our section numbers.
I move that we change the effective date to...
So they're all...
What is it?
Compatible. They're incompatible. You've got gaps in
the... Yeah, but to July 1st, right?
I'm not changing the... on that specific
one. What's the date?
Yeah, it is a July 1st date.
Can we have the amendment specifically?
Okay.
Well, that's what I'm trying... can't we do it specific? I don't think...
Okay. Section 6. Yeah. Is one of them. You're starting Section 6 on January 1st, but Section 6 is a housekeeping measure changing the section number from 380 parens 9 to 383. And that takes effect on July 1st. You're saying that change in Section 6 shouldn't take effect until January 1st, and you would have a gap of 6 months.
Okay
so the right. 6 has to move.
Okay, I move the effective date for Section 6 to July 1st. Be July 1st.
All right, so we just essentially add Section 6 into Section 39 and remove it from Section 40, right?
Right.
Okay. Hearing no objection, that motion will be adopted. We cut out one of those sections, so all those numbers are...
Yeah, that's the problem. I would like to review effective dates. Because we've had many problems before when someone else drafts it.
Well, that would just be a matter of drafting, because
right.
We did move to renumber all these substantive sections. If we need a motion, I'll make one myself that the sections 39 through 41 be rewritten so as to take into account the data subtracted by in this committee. No objection, that will be adopted.
They usually do that in drafting, anyway.
Yeah. I don't think we need a motion. We just got one in there. Okay, Milt?
Mr. Chairman, I think also you need an effective date on the repealers in section 37 there.
Oh, yes.
And
I assume that would be a drafting.
In section 39. That was my conclusion earlier.
Okay, well then I move and ask unanimous consent to add add the number 37 to section 39.
And you get 7 votes.
If there's no objection, the motion carries. That covers it. Okay. Are there other Mr. Green?
Yeah, I'd like to try this amendment on besides back on the page 6, line 18, dealing with the benefits for dependents. After the word benefit year, put a semicolon. Provided, however, that before additional benefits for dependents are paid to an insured worker, the department shall ascertain that no other insured worker is claiming or is receiving benefits for the same dependents during the same weekly benefit period, and that the claimant shall produce evidence satisfactory to the department that the dependents claimed are dependents of the claimant. Maybe that can be improved on.
We'd want to look at it, sir.
It's left. Okay, but I would comment on that.
I've got another section dealing with it. They found that they're either enjoying or found to be void.
Well, I guess what I was after was not only two people drawing unemployment based on the same dependents, but also a situation where one parent's working and the other one's drawing unemployment based on the dependents. I just don't think people ought to be allowed to do that. But anyway,
well,
I have to remember, but that was part of it.
Well, it wouldn't take me long to change that around.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, just me.
Yeah, I think we need to change it. I'm not sure because it's, I just heard it, but I think what Clark's amendment does is already covered in the law. The law prohibits double counting of dependents, essentially. If a man and wife can't both get unemployment insurance and claim the same dependents. So I think it's already covered.
Yeah, let me ask that. How do you just check through your records? How do you verify that?
Well, say if we have John Doe and Mary Jo filing, husband and wife, and then if both claim dependents, then our computer would trigger that up. That's how we would find out if they lied to us, if they file separately.
But if they don't have the same name, you would never know that.
Well, they're filing under Social Security name. Their name has to match their Social Security number, and that's about the only way. But if they're separated, you could have a problem. Right today, where we have a divorced parent, and the wife claims, and she's remarried, and the husband on another name claims, these get by and we never catch them right now.
Well, unless you know something about the dependents themselves, you'll never know as long as they don't have the same name.
That is correct. We don't know if it's a dog that they filed a claim as a dependent.
That's why I'm
talking
about.
Mr. Chairman? Well, in that case, then, I think perhaps Clark's language would be an improvement.
But I require it. It does require proof satisfactory to you that these are actual dependents. I'm broadly interpreted. They're not dependents.
If we're going to have dependency allowance, then we need some way of proving it.
Well, we're going to move it. I think that language covers that.
Okay.
The question? Yeah.
Okay. Is there objection to the proposed amendment? Hearing no objection, the amendment carries.
I have another question before I make this other amendment. What is the status of the law now? Are you under an injunction, or is there some ruling that now is pending that you can't ask for this information?
We have been taken to court in the past, it was 5-6 years ago, maybe Doris can remember exactly when it transpired, and we were ruled that it was
unconstitutional invasion of privacy to dwell into certain aspects of an individual's personal life. It triggered with the first thing that started when we wanted a birth certificate for an adopted child. And then it just grown from there until we're down to the point that we practically can't ask anything if it's an invasion of privacy. Like asking for a W-2 form. We can't ask to look at a W-2 form to see who the major earner was in the family.
Well, I might enlarge on that just a little bit. Our form does ask them to certify on the form that has a statement on it saying these are my dependents and then they must list them. But those are not retained in any kind of a cross-match system to be able to tell somebody else had that same child.
Okay. Well, let me ask what you're, I'm not moving the amendment. This would be a new section 39 at the end. It would be an effective, kind of an effective date. It says, in the event any of the conditions for obtaining additional benefits for dependents are enjoined or are found to be void by the final judicial determination, all provisions of section 16 providing for additional benefits for dependents are repealed. They may find that unconstitutional too, but I...
Anything you put in the law, we're willing to go with.
Anything?
You put it in the law, Mr. Cooper.
Okay. The is that an amendment?
Yeah, I'll move that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
okay.
Question.
Yeah.
Well, what is the problem? I can't remember what the problem was we're trying to get at, Clark. Are you worried about it being declared a
divorced people? No.
What final judicial determination is it going to be?
So if there's a permanent exemption or they find the conditions void, the condition being that you have to show satisfactory proof.
Oh, if they don't allow that, then you
well, as I understood it, there may be a judicial determination that this is not a welfare program, but rather an insurance program, and that persons without dependents are, in effect, supporting the ones with dependents because the same amount is paid into the fund. That would trigger a suit saying that.
Mr. Chairman, wouldn't such a judicial determination, I'm not opposing the amendment, but wouldn't such a judicial determination automatically do the same thing, repeal that, or would it just leave the law in question, or what would it do?
Hard to tell what those people would do, but I would imagine that's what it would do, but
I mean, if such a thing happened, the state would only have one option anyway, which would be to do what you're talking about, right, Clark?
Well, two things would happen. Either they repeal those sections giving additional benefits for dependents, or they find unconstitutional or void the section that removes the benefits. I mean, there is law that, you know, they could find anything. They could even strike down the conditions and the repealer. Maybe they won't do anything.
Well, anyway, there's a motion out, and there's an objection to the motion.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Duncan,
I'm not clear yet on what effect this really has. Now, in the present law, we don't have any requirements for for provision of proof of benefits of dependents.
Presently, for dependents, there's presently a payment for dependents, correct?
Yeah.
And there's no requirement for proof?
All we do, Mr. Duncan, is when they come in and file an initial claim, we have a space there that says, do you have dependents? They say yes. We ask their name, their birth date, and their age. And they certify this is true. And that's it. We take their word for it at that point in time. There is no proof offered.
Okay. Now, if present law was to just go ahead, no changes were to be made, if there, how would any judicial determination affect present law?
Well, if you put in the law that required proof, then we'll ask for it. We're prohibited right now from requiring these birth certificates and stuff like this.
And then
by the courts.
What you're saying is that the courts may find that we cannot require it.
That's right.
So they may have found that the reason they couldn't require it is because the legislature hadn't authorized it.
It wasn't there with the legislature.
Okay, but if they find we can't require proof, then
I guess the option is that we go back to not requiring proof, go back to the same system we have now. Not that we necessarily have to go back to repealing the extra for dependents.
That's right.
Okay, I'll maintain my objection.
Questions?
All right, is there further discussion on the proposed amendment? As I understand it, Clark, what you're doing is proposing a new section 39, is that?
Yeah.
And then
renumber
it. And it'll be renumbered, right.
Then we have that one from Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Okay.
Could you read the amendment?
In the event any of the conditions for obtaining additional benefits for dependents are enjoined or are found to be void by a final judicial determination, all provisions of section 16 providing for additional benefits for dependents are repealed.
For that particular, Mr. Chairman, for that particular applicant or claimant?
For all applicants, there would be no more additional benefits.
Okay. There is objection. All in favor of the motion, please raise your hands. All opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Are there other amendments or comments or anything else that we've got to go here? Leo.
Well, there's this amendment that the Associated Class of School Board submitted. I don't know about the merit of this or that amendment, but I know if it's if it isn't adopted, what happens, at least in my district, and I think it's probably in the rest of them, where they've already made up their budgets. I think according to the information they sent me, it's cost the borough $200,000. They made up their budget for a year. That's a normal joke. And I think, well, what if somebody testified here, the Anchorage School Board cost a little more close to $1 million. I think
a lot of
consider this amendment.
Okay. There's the amendment would be, if offered, would be to section 22, which since we omitted a previous section, would actually be 21, but we'll leave that aside. It would be to section 22, page 9. The proposal is to revise the present language of AS 232375. So we in effect inserted in there on line 8 or 8.5 or something. And Mr. Rhodes moves and asks unanimous consent to amend the bill. In accordance with the school board suggested amendment at page 9, section 22. There is objection. Okay. Is there a comment?
Yeah.
Mr.
Green. I have two problems. One is that, I couldn't see the difference between this and the contractor who works, say, 9 months. But aside from that, we don't have any record that all these people are going to run down upon adjournment or school letting out and file for unemployment. We want to address it later. We still have the option, do we not, addressing that later? The option doesn't expire, does it?
What type of option?
This is the option talking about to limit the...
Oh, you're saying, right, we could do it at any time. It's in the federal law. Whenever we decide to do it, then we can do it. Go ahead and write it down.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, at last night's meeting, I stated that the department was in opposition to this. During a meeting today and with the governor's office, we are not in opposition of amending this bill. We can live with it either way. So that's our stand at this time.
All right. Okay, Ms. Buchholz?
I wasn't quite clear the testimony from Mr. Green, but maybe he can clarify it because it's still clouding my mind. Now, I'll use this example of the custodial help in the school districts. Most of them work through the summer, doing a lot of work, but some of them get laid off. Are we talking about these people that get laid off because they no longer have work?
It would be those that are on a school year contract. Okay, those that are only going to work whenever the school is in session. They generally have, I believe, two groups of employees, those that are going to work a full year and know what they will work a full year, and those that are going to work a 9 month, and they go in and say, we need you for a 9 month position and not a 12 year position. If he was on a 12 year position, a 12 month position, then yes, he would be eligible as soon as he was laid off.
But there are some individuals that only work for 9-10 months period, and they know it from the very beginning that they are.
And they're contracted to come again the following year.
And these are the very same people you say who go on unemployment?
Who would be eligible July 1?
For unemployment, right now. I mean, with this.
And without the
without this, without I mean, yeah, without this.
Yes.
Is this a common occurrence? Do they do this?
Up until this time, they have not been eligible for unemployment.
They weren't eligible, but the law changed, and the law change is effective July 1st.
Okay,
so there never was a problem until now.
They will be starting July 1st.
And nobody knows whether it's going to be a problem after July 1st. Anyway, Jim?
Chair, I'm wondering, we're here from the Association of School Boards, we're proposing this. Mr. Spray is here from Local 71, so he probably has employees protected. I'm wondering if he could say a few things that would be appropriate.
Yeah, okay. There was some indication they wanted to get the pill down there for
yeah, I don't think it'll take long.
But yeah, certainly, I'd like to hear from Mr. Spray on that, on that amendment. Ken?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ken Spray, Vice President of Local 71. We represent the custodial and janitorial staff of the Anchorage School District, and we're going to oppose this amendment. I think the Representative Buckles pointed on one thing, and that is that there are groups of people that are hired for 12 months, and there are groups that are hired for 9 or 10. Also, if there are vacancies in those 12-month jobs, those 9 and 10-month employees have rights to them. The reason they have a 9 or 10-month job, that's the only job available. It does impact their ability to, their living, their standard of living, and they are laid off. Matter of fact, we have a bunch of them to be laid off the 14th of this month. In the summer months, the custodial staff strip floors and wax, but they do lay off approximately anywhere between a fourth to maybe a third of those employees. And we would oppose the amendment. We feel that they ought to be treated just like any other seasonal employee. In fact, that's what they are.
Ken, if the school district chose to bargain with the maintenance people and classified employees and sign them to year-round contracts, and that would be
we have
one
that
situation.
Now.
And you do have that happen from time to time. But we're talking about, I guess, people that don't know really from year to year, except sort of by custom, maybe whether they're going to have a job.
Well, we have an agreement. In effect, I guess maybe I should have put the words differently. We have a contract with the school district covering those employees.
Yeah.
Okay, those employees who work year-round are the senior employees who have been there the longest. And then when they leave, others move up. I mean, they just have so many positions they fund year-round for those extra custodial tasks they perform when the school is down. Those people just have to wait their turn. We have a one-year agreement, a two-year agreement. And I don't have the contract in front of me, but I believe the district in the negotiations was in support of some concerns in that area of the unemployment. These are the same employees, by the way, that have lost their Social Security contributions, too, within the last year, which was a policy in part of the district and the administration of the Social Security Act. So they've been impacted there, and we think there's another place they're going to be impacted. They have a big turnover, too, Mr. Chairman. That is, those 9 month employees leave when they find a full-time job year-round. So it impacts the school district, too. They have about a 20 or 30% turnover in those particular areas.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chairman, it's not a big deal, but I don't agree that somebody that takes a job that they know is going to last for only 9 months, when the 9 months up, that they're laid off. They're not laid off. The job just for 9 months and he quits. And every school district in my area that I represent has written and explained the additional cost and the problems that, you know, cost that goes along with it. And that's all the taxpayers' money, and they haven't had any problem up to this time. And it seems to me like that it's just that it just makes sense to adopt the amendment.
They're, Mr. Chairman, if I may, they're kind of in the same position that construction workers are. Construction workers don't have to be laid off either. They don't quit. The job finishes and they're gone. In effect, that's what happens.
But there is one prime difference, and one of those is working for a private employer, and the other one is working for the citizens.
It's very little different than Mr. Freeman. They buy bread the same store everybody else does. Put their pants on the same way and everything else. They are people, citizens, and they pay taxes.
Well, okay, is there further discussion? Questions for Mr. Spray? All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. The motion's been made. There is objection. All in favor of the...
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to...
Mr. Guy.
Mr. Green's testimony last night seemed to indicate that he was directing his very testimony towards the certificated teachers, whereas the proposed amendment, the original, before it was proposed to be amended again, seems to have directed at the professional people. Those are within the areas of instructional, research, and principal and administrative position capacities. Pursuant to Mr. Green's amendment, I would like to move to delete the word any and insured, a certificated teaching, the words. Mr. Chairman, what I don't want to do is to break in the janitors, cooks, and teacher aides if we are going to adopt this proposed amendment. What I want to do is delete the word any and ensure in its place the words a certificated teaching. If I may read part of the language, Mr. Chairman, the proposed amendment as it reads now reads as follows: based on service in any capacity for an educational institution. My proposed amendment to the amendment would be read as follows: based on service in a certificated teaching capacity for an educational institution.
Bill, I think I may stand corrected, but I believe that's the way the law is right now. In fact,
that's what I referred to earlier. The original language was direct towards the professional people.
Okay, but what I'm after, I guess what I'm saying, Bill, is that the result you're after, you would get by voting against this amendment, you come to the same result because the teachers are not. They're out of the thing anyway, unless they haven't got a contract for the following year, in which case they can go on unemployment, which is right. But if they've got a contract, they can't pick up unemployment during the summer anyhow. So you get to the same result, I think, that you're after by just voting against Leo's amendment.
That is
Mr. Green, Mr. Green might comment on that too.
I think you're correct, Mr. Chairman. Under the federal statutes, the certificated people are automatically disenfranchised from the provisions of the unemployment, and the 1977 amendment to this law did exactly the same thing in the state statute.
Well, thank you. That clarifies my question.
Okay. All in favor of the school board amendment, please raise your hand. Okay, all opposed? Okay, amendment failed. All right. Are there any further amendments, discussion, anything? Okay, if not, we'll entertain a motion here. Mr. Meekin.
Move report out of committee substitute incorporating the changes adopted by the committee.
Okay, is there objection to the motion to report out the bill? All right. I'd like for the hearing no objection, the bill will be reported out. How many due passes do we have? Okay, I'll go around with individual recommendations. I'd like to announce a meeting. I hate to mess up everybody's weekend, but I'd like to announce a meeting at 1 o'clock on Sunday. We will write those bond issues. We have to wait till then until the Senate's going to, still got some of them they're going to push through tomorrow. We won't know what we've got to work with, and we have to put on a Senate bill in order to set up some pre-constable committees.
On what time on Sunday?
1 o'clock Sunday afternoon right here.
Right in the middle of the basketball game?
Yes, sir, right in the middle of it. We can set up a radio and TV
in the light. I'll bring in the TV.
You can be watching right while there. We're yanking your fork out. I'll
put it right there.
You can get a new basketball.
I think I'm so satisfied.
It's coming out anyway, Mr. Chairman, so it doesn't make any difference whether I like basketball or not.
Okay, 1 o'clock Sunday. This is a big one. Capital move, stick to that figure. I'd like to see it come in considerably less. We can't. In the newspaper is a report of a possible understanding between members of the Senate and some of the members of this body and the governor about the schools, rural schools. The essence of it is that a capital appropriation of $110 million for rural schools would be approved out of the general fund, in return for which the Senate would deliver the votes on the corporate oil tax, the one that we passed by a big majority last year. I don't have any idea whether that's going to happen or not. The schools in question are schools that would have been built in any event through bond issues. It's not extra goodies we'd be having to put out the money anyhow. Nobody knows what's going to happen to that. It's more probable that it'll go down than that it'll go through. That, of course, will have a great deal to do with the amount in any other bond issue for rural schools, if any. Clearly, if we put $110 million in a rural school, in general funds in rural schools, the bond issue, if any, would be considerably less than if we didn't put the $110 million in there. So what I'd like to suggest, and I'm not, we'll do whatever the committee decides, but I'd like to suggest that we hold off on the rural school bond, keep the committee for a while. To wait the outcome of that bit of negotiation. As I say, I do not believe it'll go. I don't think it will. I think we're going to have to wind up fighting the school bond issue. But anyway, that's the way I look at it.
Chairman.
Yeah. I guess it depends on how you look at it. Those schools are within the definition of what the administration claims we're supposed to do by reason of the Hoots case. I think everybody here ought to understand that the state won the Hoots case, that there is no mandate for the state on account of the Hoots case. And what happened was the people on the third floor just simply caved in and to some Harvard law school people. I think they weren't even lawyers. I think they were still law students, but I've forgotten. They were people about 20, 21 years old. Some of them had never even been here. That was the great cave-in. I think we ought to build the schools because they're needed. I don't give a damn what this case says. It doesn't have any mandate as far as I'm concerned. But I think the schools are needed and we ought to build them. So that's the way I look at it. And of course, naturally, you have to draw a line somewhere. You know, you can't build a school where there are poor people or something. But I think the schools are needed and that we ought to build them. And that's why we ought to approve. But anyway, I guess it's according to how you look at it. What I'd like to do is that the Senate bills are in such disarray, and I think so irresponsibly written, that I believe that where we've got Senate bills to consider, I think we ought to use Senate bills when we can so we can get these things in the free conference, that we ought to just go back to the governor's bills to start with as kind of a markup vehicle. If it's a House bill that we're using as a vehicle, maybe we should go back to whatever the last committee referral was before it came here. If that's okay with the members, that's, you know, we can go ahead and do it that way. I don't think we ought to start at the figures that the Senate put in there. We just start at the governor's figures, for lack of a name better. Or if we have a light bond issue here, we can just take whatever the last committee referrals thing was. The way Hugh wants to handle these bond issues at this time is that we're going to set up a kind of an overall committee to keep tabs on everything, and that separate free conference committees will be set up on all the bond issues. So I suppose most everybody here will be serving on those things. But there will be an overall committee, and I don't know who's going to be the coordinating committee yet. It may be Hugh himself, or you know, maybe Hugh, Terry, and Sam, or somebody. I don't know. Russ?
Well, how does that work exactly? You know, if people are on a free conference committee, I mean, they're going to have to actually meet with the Senate conferees.
Yeah.
But they're going to report and work closely and cooperate with the central organizing committee. Is that the idea?
Yeah. They'll have to check back with the overall coordinating committee before they can sign off on it. That's a bond issue. I don't know how else to do it.
In other words, they're not planning for tentaries, but they're...
If you don't coordinate it somehow or other, you just... Particularly this year, I think you wind up with some kind of, some form of disaster. Anyway. Maybe... if those ground rules sound okay, has anybody got any suggestions? Other than that, I'd agree to it. Okay.
Yeah, just one question. Yeah. Do you plan to set the school issues aside?
Yeah, I'd like to have some understanding as to the amount there. Assuming that this business with the capital appropriations does not go through, it seems to me we were going to have to set aside some kind of maximum figure there. And I don't know. I think what's reasonable, somewhere around 55 or 60.
Well, I wonder if anybody would keep in mind that there are certain areas that have some kind of tax base and they're first-class cities. I think those things ought to be kept in mind. Also, the fact that there's some of them that have got all their debt service paid off until 1977, and 50% on that. We have a bill that does different than that. It's over incentive finance. And I think those things ought to be kept in mind too.
Okay.
They had a beautiful bill last year in House Bill 89, but they screwed that up, so that...
Okay. It may be in order also to run by and set some general guidelines for what we're going to shoot at, because I would be unalterably opposed to reporting out 350 million dollars worth of bonds. I just don't want to be around here to do that. So we need to set some outside figures to shoot at, and you know, keep the issues within those limits.
Well, you mentioned about maybe we should work off of the Senate bonds, because and then we go to free conference, and then you mentioned we should start with the governor's bonds.
No,
I'm not quite clear on
that. What I was suggesting, we don't have to go this way, it just seemed to be a pretty reasonable way to start out. We got to start with something as a markup vehicle, sort of, okay? I'm opposed to using the Senate bills. The only thing they did is pile in everything they can think of and throw it over here. I'll be damned if I'm going to consider that kind of crap. Where we've got Senate bills to consider, seems to me we ought to just go on back and use the original governor's bill for start. And incidentally, this handout has got all the bond issues except for the floor amendments. They made lots and lots of floor amendments on the bond issues, in the Senate, is my understanding. So the floor amendments are not those goodies of probably, I guess, $20 or $30 million somebody said was added on the floor. They're not in here. But so God knows what they really came up with. Those bills, I think they were irresponsibly written, and I don't see any sense in even bothering to refer to them. We'll just use the governor's bills. But where our committees have considered these bond issues, and before they pass them along to us, I think we ought to start there. I know the Hess committee did a hell of a job with the rural school budget. Rich?
Well, on the bond issue that you gave me on 712 was,
yeah.
We listened, and you heard me mouth off on the floor of the House to comment everything, the sky was the limit, but when the committee met up here, they told me that the sky was not the limit, and I totally agreed with them. We raised the bond issue from 3.848 to 5.095, which was, and everyone that came with the request had the full justification. We sort of, the committee kind of agreed that anything that was in excess of $500,000 would be taken to the full committee, and we had one request from Representative Bradley for a skating rink for Eagle River for $2.4 million, and I thought that it was best that that request come to the full committee. We did not accept it in our...
Well, we don't have any authority to build skating rink in the community.
Well, anyway, we did hold our bond issue. There was nothing crazy and wild in it at all.
Okay. Part of the one thing I neglected to mention is part of the understanding, at least this time, is that the four things in the first University of Alaska activities facilities, they're all incompleted buildings. Three of them in Anchorage, one of them in Fairbanks, plus the sewer dock, which is an absolutely necessary thing, $1.5 million. That those would go in general fund. They would also be paid for in general fund. So they finish the Performing Arts Center in Anchorage, the Phys Ed building in Anchorage, the parking site improvement in Anchorage, and the Patty building thing in Fairbanks and the sewer dock. So that $5.5 million, if the tax bill goes, will be in the general fund. And the other university stuff would go on the bond issue. Okay. There have been subcommittees appointed in some of these areas, and when we reach those areas, those subcommittee chairmen should report. Otherwise, you know, we'll just start from scratch. What I'd like to do is suggest some rough
goes for, in these areas, and we can jockey around with them as time, you know, as we go along. But the first thing we've got here is the U of A. And I'd like to suggest a $20 million bond issue there that would take care of everything except for voc ed facilities, some of which are in the university system. The governor put in three different ones. He put in the so-called activities facilities, which are essentially the things I think that he felt the public turned down last time and will continue to turn down forever and ever. I feel the same way. But I think once you start a building, you just have to finish it. He also put in the capital improvements on in Senate Bill 451, and he also put in voc ed facilities, House Bill 714. The Senate also put in bond issues for community colleges. I think that all those items should be consolidated with the exception of the voc ed facilities, because the sewer and skill center is in that. That's a major item, and it doesn't have anything to do with the University of Alaska, so we'll have to split that off. I'd like to start, if it's okay, with Senate Bill 451. Senate Bill 451, which is listed on page 1A. These numbers may have to be jockeyed around depending on the fate of the general fund appropriation for the rural schools. But we might as well put them in the free conference. Okay, the first item there on the governor's bill is land acquisition, access roads, and parking lot at Sitka. Was that addressed in the capital budget?
Yes, I think it's
our capital budget.
It's been handled in the capital budget, Mr. Chairman. I think you can take it off. The Senate did.
Does the Senate do it too?
Yes.
All right, that good. Okay. Okay, storage facilities, Fairbanks, that's not in there,
is it? No, it's not in there.
Water treatment improvement, TVCC, Fairbanks. What the hell is that?
That should not be TVCC. It's for the whole campus. It's the second. It's the second water treatment plant for the Fairbanks, the total Fairbanks campus. We have one water treatment plant now, so it's not identified properly. It should be for the Fairbanks campus. And it's the construction of a second water treatment plant.
Is that connected with plywood supplies?
I'm sorry, but I didn't get the whole question.
Is that the secondary system that's connected with plywood supply?
I don't know.
They were the builders.
No, I don't know.
They may have built it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
What's the justification?
They're discussing these terminals. They're having increasing demands on the domestic water supply. So they already have their own initial plant.